welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, PrecisionHydration.com. Precision Hydration offer electrolyte drinks in different strengths to match how you sweat. You can personalize your hydration strategy today at PrecisionHydration.com and get a free box or tube of Precision Hydration worth up to $9.99 using the code OxygenAddict. And we're also brought to you by our patrons who support the show each week with a monthly donation or an annual donation. And patrons of the show can get our 2018 Patrons Only podcast as a thank you. All right, guys, welcome to the show. Bit different this week. I'm pre-recording because I'm going to be away the week that this publishes, but just wanted to give a quick top and tail to this fantastic interview that Helen's put together with Annie Emerson. Annie is a longtime legend of British triathlon. You probably recognize her these days as the face of doing the commentary for a lot of the triathlons that are around. She's on a lot of the BBC coverage, but back in the day when I started racing back in 2001, 2002, she was certainly one of the leading lights of British triathlon. And I remember actually the first ever triathlon that I ever did, the 70.3, or as it was called at the time, Half Ironman UK. Annie absolutely demolished the field. I think she had the second fastest run of everybody, including male pros that day. And the run went up and down Llanberis Pass in North Wales, which for those of you who know it, is a hideous climb. So she's long lived in my memory as just one of the most outstanding runners that the sport has pretty much ever seen. And I think that performance was pretty staggering to a lot of people. So we've got the interview for you. Just before we do that, I wanted to give a shout out to our sponsors over at Precision Hydration. If you've not been over and taken their online sweat test, you can do that at their website, precisionhydration.com. Basically, it's an online questionnaire to see how heavy or sweaty you are, or to see how salty or sweaty you are, given response to certain questions that are there. With the summer months upon us at the moment, it is imperative that you take care of your electrolyte needs. I really rate Precision Hydration as probably the best product on the market for electrolytes. It's completely balanced for the strength of electrolytes that you need. So if you're a heavy sweater or you're an extremely salty sweater like I am, you can pour these sachets into your drinks bottles. They're almost completely tasteless. They're certainly not salty, which was a massive surprise for when I started first taking them, because in the past, my only experience of trying to take hydration salts was that they made your drinks just taste almost like salt water. Precision Hydration has got none of that because they don't use sodium chloride, so it doesn't have that horrible salty taste, and it helps replace all those electrolytes that you lose during sweat. So particularly if you are suffering from cramp at the moment, or you're having night cramps after training, these guys are going to be a lifeline for you. And the great news is, for listeners of the podcast, you get to try it absolutely free. If you use the code OXYGENADDICT over on their website, you can get a free box or tube of Precision Hydration worth up to $9.99. All you've got to do is pay the postage. It's an absolute no-brainer in terms of a risk-free trial. So get over there and check it out. All right then, over we go now to today's interview of the week with Annie Emerson.
Annie Emerson, hello, and welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. It's lovely to have you on. We've got there. We're giggling already. We've only just hit record.
I know. I have that problem. I make people laugh. You know, people who don't really know me think I'm really serious, and I don't know what happens, but really I'm just a bit of a joker, really. I'm not very good at taking anything seriously. And I'm obviously slightly technophobic, but anyway, that's great.
No one needs to know about the technical issues, joys that we've had, but we're on. We're now connected. It's all good. So, Annie, how the devil are you?
I am really well, mad as ever. 500 million things going on in my life, but that's all really good. I don't think I'd have it any other way. I just would like one day that I'm bored. One day would be good, but I don't know if that's ever going to happen, so I'm just going to dream about it.
Do you know any triathletes that don't live above 100 miles an hour?
I don't think so. I think there are some people out there that are very, very organised, and I think that's the key, really, isn't it? Being very organised, really, which I'm not. I'm not at all. I live in organised chaos. But there you go. But some people are much better than I am, so they probably, you know, get on better than I do.
No, I'm sure. Oh, I love it. So, Annie, you have been involved in triathlon for around about 20 years. So how did you get into it in the first place?
Do you know what? It's really scary, but I've been involved in triathlon for 28 years.
So nearly 30 years.
Yeah, and that is so terrifying because I had my birthday the other day and how old was I? 48. I go with the 70, so I'm 1970. And that's just kind of nuts. Like, I don't know how. And I think sometimes people look at you and go, but you're not supposed to get old when you're a bit of a kind of known character. And then they see you and they go, God, yeah, she has got a bit old. But yeah, it's changed massively. In a good way, in a bad way, you know, I guess it's like any sport. And when it becomes more serious and there's more money, you can sometimes slightly lose the characters, but then we see a faster, perhaps competitively more exciting sport, I suppose, in some ways.
And how did you get involved in it in the first place?
Do you not know my story?
Well, other people might not.
It's kind of, I think it's funny. I think it's inspiring, but it's also slightly embarrassing. So I originally started off as a little bit of a sort of teenage hooligan and didn't quite know what I was doing with my life and had traveled a lot. I'd been to Australia. I'd spent half my youth growing up in Spain. And I was working in a job, a sales job in Chiswick. And I met quite a well-known guy in the sport who's a coach who's been around for years. And I guess I have him to thank for everything. There's a guy called Andrew Potter, who I met at Chiswick Pool in Brentwood Pool in Chiswick. And I just kind of, I decided to start swimming because I was going out and having too much fun and probably drinking a bit too much wine. In where are we? The late 80s. So it would have been about 1990, 91. And I thought, God, you know, I really kind of need to do something. Like, I can't kind of wake up every day with a hangover, even though it's lots of fun. So I started swimming. And I think there became not so much the competitive, but the repetitive nature, where I thought, okay, I've swam twice this week. And next week, I'm going to swim three times. And then I met Andrew Potter and a couple of other guys that went, oh, we do triathlon. You should give it a go. And I was like, oh, my God. And honestly, if someone had said at the age of 18, you are going to be a triathlete, an international triathlete, I would have said, yeah, there's some pigs flying over there. And I'm not joking. So, yeah, that's how it all started, really, from meeting a couple of guys, particularly Andrew Potter, who helped me a lot early on. And I guess I had a big, not leg up as such, but, you know, it was a sport where it wasn't so competitive. You know, so quite quickly, I guess I rose through the ranks. And, you know, I got some very good sponsors early on and got some half decent results. And it kind of went from there, really. So that's me. Yeah.
So how long did it take for you to go from, you know, just doing it for a little bit of fun and something to kind of get fit and active to actually that elite level?
Well, I think 91, 92, I was trying to sort of mix. I gave up my sales job and thought it would be a better idea to become a waitress. But it wasn't that great because I was working late nights and then trying to get up in the morning to go and train. And, you know, I had sort of, I guess, dampened down my slightly wayward kind of behaviour by that stage. So I was kind of being quite serious and trying to focus on it. But it did get quite hard because I was quite knackered a lot of the time. And I learned along the way, and it's not easy, you know, and I know that. I was an age group athlete. I raced at the World Championships in Manchester when Spencer Smith won, the fantastic Spencer Smith. But, you know, I'd spent 18 months kind of fighting fatigue because I'd overtrain, and then I got shin splints, which I've had recently, actually. You never learn, do you? and so that was 93. And then I was lucky because, as I mentioned, I half grew up in Spain. So my dad was over there. And so at some point, probably around about the age of, I guess, 24, 25, he was like, right, okay, if you want to take this seriously, come back to Spain, train in the warm weather, could do a bit of work with him. So pay my way. But yeah, train mainly. And I think it was maybe, I've had some horrible times of kind of going to European Cup races and then getting charged for my bike and not having enough money to pay and standing there crying and like all the stories, I guess, because you do see elite athletes going, wow, you know, how lucky are they? But, you know, normally there's a path to it that can be good and bad. And then eventually, I think a bit of a breakthrough race was a brilliant race in Schliersee in Germany in the Bavarian region. And I won a race there in 1997, a European Cup race. It suited me because it didn't matter so much about the swim. And my swim was obviously quite crap at times, most of the time, actually. But it was really tough bike and run. And I remember seeing Brett Sutton there. and he was amazing. And we sort of connected, although we didn't get together until much later on. And I won a race. And I think that's when I started thinking. But it was quite a long journey from, you know, the World Championships in 93 to about, I think it was 97 that I won that race. So it's a bit of a roller coaster.
And so when you won that race in 97 and you met Brett, or you saw Brett, was that like the first time? Were you aware of him and what he did at that point?
I think I did. I think I'd seen him at a World Cup race in Australia or something. He said, it was words or something along the line of, you're too girly or something to come and train with my squad. And I was like, okay, buddy, whatever. And then I think he saw me in Schliersee, which was quite a hardcore, course. And he said, okay, you know, you can come and train. But it really wasn't until... wow, I went to another race. And this is kind of fast forwarding to 2001, Gerard Mayer, which is another great European Cup race. And I won that. And he went, okay. I think I went and found him and said, okay, come on, will you take me on? But by that stage, I was 31. I always wish I'd gone a bit younger. But the next 2 years for me were brilliant. And he sort of, I guess, you know, did amazing things with the potential I had, you know, and really brought it out of me, which I will be, you know, forever grateful for.
And at that time, was that when you met up with, you know, Siri Lindley? Weren't there like the three of you just sort Siri of this crazy, Lindley. You know, these hardworking, amazing three?
There are some stories that I just don't know if I could tell you. I mean, it's not always what people think. Siri Lindley and Loretta Harrop were two of the most amazing people and the most amazing training partners. And oh my gosh, I'll never, ever like forget them all the time that we had. And I can honestly say that was one of the funniest, I guess, physically toughest times in terms of training. But Brett always had a way to put it together that it worked for me, so I didn't kind of necessarily suffer like some other people have done. And Loretta, of course, training with Loretta Harrop, who won the silver medal in Athens, was absolutely amazing. She was an incredible person. Perhaps like when you kind of looked at her, and there's some stories out there how she went to the Australian Institute and had all her stuff measured, and they were like, oh, you're not good enough, go away. Which was really irrelevant, because she was the hardest trainer, the hardest athlete on the start line you could ever come across. I think, you know, and Siri was the same as well. But, you know, we're still in touch, not enough, but we are still in touch. We had some funny stories. Oh, my goodness me. I don't really think I can talk about them.
Can anyone else get a word in edgeways when the three of you are together?
It was quite a special group, because I guess individually we were all quite different. So... no, probably not.
And did you always get on, or were there sometimes, you know, around races whereby there was such a competitive edge to it?
I never had a problem with the girls. The girls had a problem with each other because they were so competitive. So we'd go out running, and it was supposed to be an easy like hour sort of out and back. And by the time we were 15 minutes from home, they would be absolutely caning it. And I'd just be like, this is supposed to be an easy run, because I'm not really really that competitive. I'm not in their class. They were mad. They'd stand on the start line and want to kill people, whereas I'd stand on the start line and want to go home and be sort of slightly retching and wanting to be sick. And they'd be like standing there kind of like, bring it on. But I do remember a time with Loretta, and we were one particular time in Edmonton. It was World Championships, and she hadn't had the race hadn't sort of played into her hands. And she went back through the packs looking for me, because she knew that I had a really strong run leg, and if she could pull me forward, then perhaps I had a chance of doing something really good. But what she didn't know was I wasn't enjoying the swim. So I swam across the lake and went and got out and went back to my hotel. That's another story. That was one of my few DNFs. Yeah, that was. I just remember the ITU kind of going, it's wetsuit, it's non-wetsuit. Yes, it's non-wetsuit. And me just going, and it'd been raining, and I was really cold. And we got to the first buoy, and I was right at the back of the pack, and I just hated it. So I swam to the other side of the lake and got out. But not many people know about that.
What did Brett say?
Brett was okay. You know, I think Siri won that year. And Brett was kind of cool. You know, he kind of dealt with me. You know, he knew how to deal with me. Loretta, oh no, that was another occasion where I walked onto the pontoon and walked off. I thought Loretta would be really mad with me, but she was quite impressed because she said she would never have dared do such a thing. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm telling you these stories.
And was that literally your, you know, the frame of mind just was not there. And it was just like, you know what? I'm not in it today. I'm not enjoying it. I'm out.
I think the excuse I give myself as kind of lacking any sort of competitive competition when I was younger, really. I had a couple of decent cross-country races that I was thrown into at school. But I didn't, you know, I kind of look at my own kids and I think, you know, they're doing kind of little junior part runs. I mean, I'm definitely not pushing them down the triathlon route at all. But, you know, Zoe swims and they're doing a few things like that now, which I guess I didn't ever have when I was growing up. No fault of my parents. I just didn't kind of swing that way. And so I think I probably lacked a little bit of competition to have been able to deal with, you know, standing on a start line, you know, because it was never that I didn't want to do it. It was just that sometimes I've worked myself so much with the fear of kind of failure and letting people down and stuff that, you know, that's what kind of really consumed me at times when I was racing.
What do you say to your athletes now?
Oh my God, it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, I always like think, you know, tomorrow's another day. You know, at the end of the day, there's always like, sounds like I'm an alcoholic, I'm not. There's always a beer waiting for you. You know, there's always, you know, there is other things other than racing. You know, I guess that's not going to really help people. How do you deal with your nerves? I think it's a really tough one. I do, because, you know, I coach some amazing age group athletes and they put a huge amount of pressure on themselves because they want to succeed and so they should want to. And if you don't want to, then you shouldn't be in it. But when I say succeed, I mean at any levels. It doesn't matter if you just want to, you know, run a 2:45 Olympic distance or a 3-hour one, or you want to do a 2-hour one or compete for your country. You know, it doesn't matter. It's all relative to the person. But I think, you know, you do have to put things into perspective in life. And definitely as I've got older, you know, I am quite irritatingly philosophical about everything because I just kind of think, oh my God, look at the world and the crap that goes on. And actually we have to give ourselves a reality check a lot of the time. So this probably doesn't really help, but, you know, there you go. Those are my words of advice.
Cracking stuff. Do you ever wish that you did have more of a competitive edge? Like, you know, if you could rewind the clock.
Yeah, I do. I would love to. And I know that I have been criticised for this in the past, but I would love to have done more with my running. It's not I don't really love triathlon, but I'm not. I mean, even now, I have a really good swim buddy and we go swimming together and I stand on the edge of the pool just going, I don't want to get wet. I don't want to get wet. I mean, how many times have I dived in the pool? We swam six days a week with Brett, but I still hate getting wet and I get quite claustrophobic. So I don't like being immersed in water, seeing where I can, you know, I'm not going, so to speak. So I don't, but I love swim training. You know, I guess I'm quite a contradiction. So once I'm in and I'm training, I love it. The bike, I'm okay with. Like, I do enjoy the bike and I did really enjoy the bike. But running is my real passion and I'd love to have maybe run a bit more, you know, to have just seen how far that I could have got as a runner because I probably didn't quite reach my potential, I don't think, really. I think when I was with Brett, I did qualify for the world's half marathon team. You know, and off the back of triathlon training, I ran some half decent, you know, run time. So it would have been nice to have seen where I could have actually taken that. But I would have had to have started a lot younger.
You're still running now, aren't you?
I still run now. Yeah, I'm still chasing a sub-3 hour. I've kind of failed. I was not miserably, but I've had two kind of 301s and a 305 and or thereabouts. There were some questions on the course I did it on because it was Manchester. So, I mean, more annoying would have been if I had gone under and then they'd have sort of like cancelled all the times. But I'm planning on going to Abingdon at the end of October. I'm keeping it because I've got so many weekends away this year with BBC World Triathlon Series, with mixed relays, with stuff I'm doing with Dream Team, who are fab, I'm going to Yorkshire Marathon and working with them, and then London Triathlon. So I thought I'd keep it at home this time, not do anything too far away from home. So I am planning on, you know, giving it another go. I keep saying to myself, you know, one last go, one last go. I'll be like 60 falling apart. Go, just one more go. One more chance.
No, you'll be 60 and you'll take inspiration from Eddie Brocklesby, who you coach. We can talk about her again shortly. Yeah. But you'll be 60 and you'll take inspiration from her. And and you'll be nailing it at 60.
Yeah, I don't know. I think by the time I'm 60, I'd like to go and do something else, a bit wacky and out there, and go and like trek somewhere, or you know, do a big climb somewhere. Or I do think you do. I think life's too short to just keep like chasing the same dreams. At some point, you have to have a cutoff. And this year, actually, I've started coaching a guy, so I'm doing quite. Who's just focusing on a marathon, and I'm doing a lot of running with him because he wants to support. So that's kind of one of the reasons why I've decided to have another crack at the marathon, because I thought, my God, I'm going to have so many nice, steady miles in my leg because I'm running quite a lot slower with him, that you know I perhaps can give it a crack. But otherwise, I might have called it a day. I keep telling my husband I've called it a day. I brought me in it though. I enter races, and then someone down at the pub locally, a guy called Roger Barr, who a lot of people know, he's a great triathlete. He's doing fell running and trail running and stuff like that. Sort of like goes, yeah, so Abingdon Marathon, and Tim's sitting there going, marathon? What marathon?
That was when I kept quiet. Whoop.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Did I? Oh God. Didn't I tell you? I'm sure I did. That's normally my line.
Annie, you mentioned your work with the BBC in the World Triathlon Series. We have had three races so far. We've got Nottingham and Leeds coming up. That's really exciting, isn't it? With the mixed relay and stuff in Nottingham.
It is great because it gives everyone, well, it gives the elite athletes who put so much into the sport, you know, another chance of a medal, because obviously they're quite limited, the medals, the opportunities in triathlon. And I think the mixed relay it's great for our sport. You know, I think it showcases it really, really well, and it's really exciting. And you know, when we were talking with Jess a few weeks ago in Manchester, she's like, oh my God, I mean, isn't she brilliant? I won't try and do her accent, but you know, it's like, oh my God, you know, I mean, she's quite chilled. So she said, oh, I don't get nervous for the individual racing at all, but basically she says she absolutely craps herself when it comes to the mixed relay, because it's a whole thing of not letting, you know, your team members down and things, and it's fast. And I guess sometimes, you know, from a spectator point of view, you know, it can be quite long triathlon, so something that happens so quickly and you can't afford to make any mistakes, it's great for the sport, really, really good for the sport, and it's really good fun. In fact, it's quite hard to commentate on because it happens so quickly, you can hardly keep up. But I guess as there's more of them, we'll get better at it.
What did you make of Nottingham last year and how that worked last year?
It was brilliant. I mean, we had, it was really nice because some of these sort of younger athletes coming through had an opportunity to race up alongside, you know, some of the elite guys. And I think it went really well. I think it will improve all the time because obviously these are really early days. And the fact that Nottingham is stepping up to, you know, this kind of international level of showing people, you know, how it's done is brilliant, because Nottingham will be the first of the qualification events for the mixed relay. And obviously they staged the first event last year. Then we'll have Hamburg World Championships, and we will have Edmonton as well. So that's really exciting. So there's this World Series where the athletes can go and collect points. So it's going to be really, really fun.
That's so cool. And especially for like British triathlon fans, you know, this week, this magical week in June, we've got the 7th in Nottingham, and then literally 2 days later, we've got the World Triathlon Series in Leeds. It's great, isn't it?
It's absolutely brilliant. I mean, Leeds, I think we're all sort of slightly holding our breath at the moment to go, what are the Brownies doing? What's Alistair and Johnny doing? That's kind of one thing I kind of feel like I want to make a point about, because the amount of people that have sort of said to me at Commonwealth Games, what happened to the Brownlees? It's like, those guys have done so much for our sport. They are such amazing athletes. It's like, kind of give them a break. We can't put all the pressure onto them year after year. You know, there are some great athletes coming through, and in fairness, you know, stepping up to their level, I guess, is a daunting task for some athletes. But I think they'll want the fact that if they're there in Leeds, it's almost as important as any other race. You know, it'll be bigger than the Commonwealth Games for them because it's the hometown. You know, it's so huge. They're so big in Leeds that I think we're just hoping that they're all sort of, or both of them are away, you know, with this big focus on Leeds. But, you know, can they do what they did last year? I mean, oh, well, Alistair, I'm not including Johnny in it, but what Alistair did last year, because I know he was, you know, kind of the main instigator of, like, when they hit the town and they had six seconds over the chase pack. And I think Johnny wanted to sit up and he went, you know, I won't say what he said, but I can't imagine what he said, but it probably wasn't that. I can't mention it on this. But he, you know, he just to ride away from some amazing athletes, you know, in the way he did, in the manner that he did it, was just, God, it's out there in a class of its own, really is. Will we see that again this year? I don't know. The way the course is designed, anything can happen because it's all about that first transition and the hill. But, you know, the athletes surely should know about that by now, the same as they should surely know what Duffy's going to do in a race. But they haven't quite got that. You know, maybe third time round in Leeds, there'll be some athletes that know what they have to do to go with the brownies. But, you know, I'm not holding my breath.
You mentioned Flora Duffy there, and we had a question in from Will Offer, who says, do you think Gwen would be able to challenge Flora's domination if she was still competing and obviously hadn't switched over to focus on the marathon?
Oh, I think it is a really good question. Some people might turn around and go, yeah, of course she could. But when you look at Flora's time this weekend in Yokohama, 33:30. Gwen's run faster on that course, but I'm not sure if the course hasn't just changed fractionally. She's starting to put herself in the league of Gwen in terms of how she runs and the pace she's running at the moment. It's not far off, I don't think. But what Flora has is the security of the swim and the bike, which is something Gwen didn't have. You know, by the time she hit Rio, she was a pretty complete athlete. You know, a lot of people are criticised for her biking or whatever, or she wasn't a swimmer when actually, you know, she'd been coming out the front pack every time. But I think Flora would be a challenge. There'd be a challenge for one another, definitely. You know, if she'd have got off the bike with Flora yesterday in Yokohama at the weekend, she would have outrun her, but it would have been close. But then Flora's doing quite special things, I think, particularly in that after the T1 phase. So in answer to the question, I don't think there's, you know, a definite answer, but I think that Flora, I don't think she'd be running, Gwen wouldn't have had those years that she did where she was completely dominating, because I think Flora, in the condition that she's in now, would have seriously challenged her. Does that answer the question?
That does answer the question. It's one of those things, it's such a shame, in a way, that Flora has absolutely peaked over the past sort of 18 months, hasn't she? And it would have been brilliant to see them go head to head, both of them at their peak. A bit like people say, you know, it would have been really good to see Chrissy Wellington at her peak going up against Daniela Ryf and what they would do against each other to kind of progress the sport as well.
It's that I always, like, you know, would like to have seen Emma Snozell running off the bike with Gwen as well. But it's funny, isn't it, how it goes in phases like that. You have one athlete that comes through and then they move off, and like Gwen's gone off to run the marathon and things, and she's doing, you know, pretty amazing things. She wasn't happy the other day with her half marathon, but what was it, a 1:10 high on a lumpy course, and you go, okay, you're on track. I think the key for her will be keeping one piece, without a doubt. You know, I don't doubt she doesn't have the engine and the drive, you know, mentally and physically, but I think, you know, it's just whether the body stays together. You know, I've tried to at certain times in my life just focus on running, and you break down quite quickly. You know, triathlon is such a great balance with the three sports.
Did you would have seen and obviously reacted to as well in Yokohama, Non got her bronze, didn't she, finishing third, and then she admitted afterwards that she'd been Googling some job applications the night before. I mean, how, yes, okay, if you're commentating for the BBC, whatever, you're probably meant to be impartial, but I'm sure you know Non very well. Like, how delighted were you to see her do that?
Really happy, because you couldn't meet a more genuine, lovely person. But also, I think she's really talented as well. You know, I think I particularly remember Chicago when she was running with Gwen Jorgensen, and she looked great, and she does as a runner. I love to watch her run, because I think triathletes don't I guess we get some criticism all around, don't we? By runners, cyclists, all the rest of it. I'd like to see them put the three of them together and do as well as our guys do, all of them. But I was really happy for Non, really, really happy. And I think the good thing for her is she's in one piece. She's not injured. The swim was great, which can sometimes be her Achilles heel. She rode well, and the run wasn't her fastest at all. But she knows she's got loads of work to do there. But she's still got, on the podium. And I think that's really good, because I'd love to see her being able to fight it out for a medal, because what happened in Rio must have been so tough for her, and the way she's pulled through it just shows, I think, her strength, her character. So if anyone deserves to go there and be in one piece and give it another, have another shot at it, I think she does.
Do you find it exciting following the British triathletes and just the way that, the Brownies have obviously inspired so many people, yet there's a whole host as well who are just, even over the past number of years, have done so well and put Britain on that triathlon map?
Following the triathletes is amazing. There's definitely a few guys coming through now. I've always had my money on Tom Bishop. He's just got he's had a bit of a niggle and stuff. I've always thought, when we saw him last year in Abu Dhabi, he was so amazing. And I thought, that's the Tom, I think, that's the Tom, the real Tom, that has that kind of potential, and it's coming through now. But it's had a little bit of an up and down time since then, but I think he'll kind of bring it back together. But Grant Sheldon, Mark Austin, there's some great guys coming through. And in terms of the girls, if we look at the four of them now are back and in one piece, which is great to see. And Jodie's another athlete that so deserves to have another shot at it all. And she'll have been disappointed with her race at the weekend because she didn't run as well. But actually, watching how she raced, she seems to be getting a little bit closer, which certainly has done since Bermuda. She stayed a bit longer on the run. She didn't drop off so quick. I think it was around about 6.5K, 7K that she really dropped off. But up until that point, she'd kind of held it together quite well. And then Georgia Taylor Brown's coming through, Sophie Colwell. So there's loads of really good people. And then we've got Jess and Vicky, and then Helen. Let's not forget Helen Jenkins, because she's had her fair share of injuries and operations and stuff. But if anyone can come back, she is a massive talent with a really big engine. So that's, it is exciting times. But, I think sometimes you do see some stuff on Twitter and things where the athletes are criticised, the Brownies are criticised for overtraining. I definitely come from the camp where you have to take risks to be brilliant and achieve great things. Some people say you don't have to, but I don't think there's one athlete out there that's won a gold medal at the Olympics, Commonwealth Games, World Championships, Europeans, that hasn't taken risks in their training. Anyway, that's my view, but not everyone will agree with this.
What was the key thing that you took away from Brett Sutton being coached by him?
That's an interesting one. To believe in yourself, I think if you do the work, then you have to believe in yourself. And it's all in the preparation. And if you get the preparation right, then you can achieve lots of things. I don't know, what else about him as a person? It's just so interesting how he believes in his athletes. So I remember having one time in Lausanne where I'd kind of given up. I was last out of the water. I remember running into transition and going, this is really embarrassing, because it was an ITU World Cup race, going, oh my God, everyone's going to be laughing at me. And my bike was there on its own. I thought, well, at least I won't have the problem of finding my bike. And then riding up the first hill thinking, God, I think I'm going to have to drop out somewhere because this is just too embarrassing for words. And then Brett was standing on the hill just going, screaming as only Brett can. And I was thinking, oh my God, okay, he hasn't given up on me, so I can't give up. And I think I rode a minute and a half. Here's me bragging, but only because I like to brag about the fact when I've had a good bike and run, because I was such an average swimmer. So I think I biked a minute and a half faster than the main pack, and then had the second fastest run, and managed to run myself into fifth position in the Lausanne World Cup, when really I could have given up. And I guess, it's learning that, when a coach believes in you, you can achieve so many things. He's such an amazing guy that has done so many amazing things for so many athletes.
Did you believe in yourself when you went to him?
A bit, I suppose, yeah. But I guess he does instill belief, and he'll just say, he doesn't say things, he doesn't compliment all the time. He'll just drop little things in that, make you start to believe in yourself. Yeah.
You coach a number of athletes that you've mentioned. We mentioned Eddie Brocklesby. Does she inspire you on a daily basis? Is she like one of the most inspiring people that you know?
She's brilliant. I mean, I just absolutely love her, and I consider her a really, really great friend, you know, above everything. She is a massive inspiration, and I think she's proof. She'll always say that she's lucky. You know, you have to have some luck on your side, absolutely, in terms of health, I think, which sadly, obviously, her husband didn't have. And losing him, I guess, gave her what she has today. And that's kind of that drive and determination to go out there and push yourself. Her story was always about when she lost her husband, her running club really supported her and they got her place in the London Marathon. It was like, I remember her always saying, you know, they gave me this place. They thought they were doing a good thing. And, you know, I got this place in London Marathon and I had to do it justice kind of thing. And, you know, her life has just changed. But, you know, I think the other thing about Eddie is not to forget is one that, you know, she's a phenomenally bright person. She's a great party animal. You're never going to go home early when Eddie's around. But, you know, what she's doing now for Silverfit, you know, she's changing people's lives. And, you know, I've been to some of her Silverfit Tuesdays and you see the people that turn up there and you just think, wow, you know, if they didn't have this, you know, their lives might be quite different. So it's not just the fact that she's making people fitter and healthier. She's introducing perhaps, you know, sometimes quite lonely people as well to this whole new community. And I think people forget about that because they see this incredibly inspiring woman who's still doing Ironman racing, you know, but it's a whole other side to her as well.
Is she doing another one this year, Annie?
Yes,
do you know?
She asked me, she said last year, or was it beginning of this year, you know, what should I do in Ironman? And I just said, no, have a year off. But Eddie might be doing the numbers and going, okay, you know, it's not like someone who's in their 40s saying have a year off. So she is going back to Cozumel, you know, against my advice. But then when Eddie makes a decision, then you just kind of go with it. So, yeah, so we were chatting today, actually, and she was saying, right, we need to sort of crack on with this training programme. I need to get myself fit for Cozumel, which is in November.
Love it. Remarkable, remarkable woman. Who do you enjoy watching race the most? Could be current or it could be someone from, you know, previous times who are no longer competing.
Oh, this is really annoying, but I'm going to say something really obvious. The two people I think I've liked or enjoyed watching the most, one is Alistair, because I just think there's no one else like there. Out there like him. He is as hard as nails, and he has that thing where the brain, even though obviously, you know, he's a mega bright guy, the brain doesn't really connect to the body. So that's why, you know, on a couple of occasions we've seen him get himself into trouble, but on other occasions we've just seen, you know, such utter brilliance, I think, from him, and no one else is able to compete with him. One thing that I was looking at the weekend actually was the fact that now Mola's moved up alongside Johnny Brownlee to have 12 World Triathlon Series wins, numerous podiums, but more podiums, but 12 World Triathlon Series wins. I think Gomez is in second place with 14 or 16, either 14 or 16, but not more than that. And Ali's out there on his own with 22. And I just think, you know, that just says it all for me. And, it, you know, he has just a style of racing that is so, so amazing. You know, sometimes I think, oh, maybe he's not even the most talented guy out there. I mean, I'm sure he's phenomenally talented. But, you know, there are a lot of guys that are talented, but they just don't quite have, if I can say it, the balls, really. I think he does. And then I just think at the moment, I just think what Flora Duffy's doing is brilliant. You know, it's just, she's just got it so right. She's so hard. She's the total package. She looks great on the bike. I love the way she rides. She's very gutsy. She's very brave. Her bike handling skills are great. She came a cropper in Abu Dhabi, but that was no one's fault. You know, that was a really brutal race in terms of what the surface the athletes had to ride on. But I think, you know, she's just such a complete package now. And I love to watch her race, you know, and I'm just waiting. I want, you know, we need Helen back, you know. Helen at her best, you know, had the swim. And I think more importantly, the speed and the strength on the bike maybe to have gone with her. And then there's other athletes as well, like Lisa Norden. Lisa might quite not have had the swim, but she's a great rider as well. But, and, you know, not forgetting our girls at all, but at the moment we haven't really got anyone that is able, although it did happen in Abu Dhabi, but, you know, I'm saying no one. Of course, we've got Jess as well. So let's not ignore Jess. It was only because she wasn't there at the weekend. So, but Jess is, you know, done such amazing things, and she's so understated. You know, I think she's still pinching herself, going, did that really happen? You know, and she is out there actually able to do it. But I think what she did in the Commonwealth Games, actually talking about Jess, which is really important, is she took that swim out, and it was brutal. You know, Vicky said that she just, you know, made it so hard and smashed up the race, and that's what gave her that medal. You know, she was brave and smart and did it. But, you know, I think Flora, on her absolute best day on the right course, as we saw in Bermuda, you know, with a bit of a hill in it. I'm quite biased, but I always like a proper course with a hill in it, and we don't see it that often in World Triathlon Series, which I think is a bit of a shame, because it makes it much more exciting racing for the viewers to watch. But yeah, she just rode away from everyone there. You know, it would have been interesting to see if Jess had been there, what she could have done. It would have been interesting.
Do you follow the longer distance as well?
I do a bit, but I'm obviously, you know, I definitely look at races, the results. I'm not madly passionate about Ironman racing. I think that's in the end why, I mean, I decided to retire anyway, but I think Brett and I would have gone our separate ways, because he said that I had to do an Ironman, otherwise he wasn't going to coach me any longer. But I never thought that I didn't really have it in me. You know, it takes I'm not sure what kind of brain it takes to do Ironman, but no.
An even more mental one.
Yeah, I'm just like, no. I mean, it's phenomenal what those guys are doing, but no. And so the races, yeah, I'll always, when there are Ironman races on at the weekend, I'm always interested to see what everyone's doing, you know, what Chrissy did, what, you know, Belinda, what Daniela are doing, what the guys are doing, you know, the pace, you know, the times they're running, the average speed on the bike is just amazing. But yeah, it's just not something I'm massively passionate about.
You would have seen Daniela competing at London.
Yes.
Would you have ever thought, well, yeah, what she's going to go off and do?
I don't know. You sort of put that kind of athlete with Brett, and that's what you get. You know, I guess it's the same with Chris, you know, that chance meeting with someone can just change an athlete. And I think, you know, he is totally instrumental in a lot of those guys' results out there and what they're achieving in Ironman.
It's mad. Honestly, it's mad. John Brunt asked a question, and he says he's 44, about to do his first triathlon. What would be a good pre-race meal?
You just eat what you normally eat. It depends what distance you're racing. You know, obviously, if he's kind of new to triathlon, then I guess he's doing sprint or Olympic or something. And I think that I think the really key thing is to eat well all the time, and particularly, you know, focus on the race week to, you know, just don't change anything, but make sure you don't miss meals, that you know, you keep your carbs up. You know, it's really important to kind of go into a race kind of full of energy. Don't forget protein. That's really important. We focus as endurance athletes a lot on, you know, carbs, but protein is just as important for muscle recovery. You know, don't forget your greens, your veggies. My husband's in earshot somewhere. Eat more, you know, I'd live on a diet of crisps and red wine, but don't tell anyone that. But no, in a serious answer, you know, if you're racing over sort of 2 or 3 hours, you know, practice, you know. So on a big day, supposing you're going, you know, you've got a big session on the Sunday, to practice what you eat the night before, practice what breakfast that you have and what works for you, because a lot of the athletes will have done the distance in training anyway. So, you know, just practice that. Practice what works for you. Certainly don't do anything different. You know, don't try anything new that you haven't tried the day before a race. That's really important. You don't need to overload on carbohydrates, because what you'll do is just make yourself heavy and lethargic, you know, the next day. But, you know, the night before a meal, you know, and have people focus a lot on pasta, but try wholemeal. And if you don't like wholemeal, go half, because there's lots of products now selling, you know, half normal, half wholemeal. That stuff's much better than, you know, the normal kind of white stuff. And have veggies, and have, you know, lots of good fish, chicken, stuff like that. You know, it's not rocket science. I guess for some people it's quite daunting, but actually just keep it simple and don't change anything.
Other than the tip of don't changing anything, what other one tip would you have for John, who's about to do his first triathlon?
It's all in the preparation. yeah, as much as you can. You know, if you get to a race and you'd like, everyone always wants to have prepared better, have done more training. You can't do anything come, like, you know, the week before. You can't do anything more by that time. So make sure, you know the race, you know the transition, you know where your bike is. If you get a chance to go around the course, definitely go around the course. And, you know, make sure you don't, you know, I hear lots of people like, oh, I'm not taking out their bikes, you know, maybe sitting on a watt bike, not going out on the road on a new TT bike beforehand. You know, don't try anything new. And there was one other thing, but obviously my brain's going because I'm so old. Enjoy it. Yeah, don't take it too seriously. You know, it's like we were talking earlier. You've got to enjoy it. And it is what it is. It's swim, bike, run. And we're so fortunate to have the opportunity to do it. If you're fit and healthy enough to take part in a triathlon, celebrate that, you know, and the result will come and it will be what it will be, you know, and there'll be a beer at the end of the day. And that's, you know, that's all good. I'm not very scientific, am I?
I'm not either, honestly. Really, really not. No. Annie, thank you so, so much for your time. It's been good fun chatting. I'm glad your house hasn't burnt down.
No, it hasn't. It was the smell of burning, but it seems to have gone. Does that mean I can go and fill my wine glass up now? Because it's a bit late.
Absolutely. Go get more vino. And thank you so, so much.
That's a pleasure. That's a pleasure. And I hope I haven't said anything to offend anyone like that, because it's all chit-chat. So anyway, yeah, it's all cool. And it's lovely chatting with you.
All right. Fantastic interview there from Helen. Thanks very much. And great to have Annie on the show. Next week, we'll be back to normal. It'll be Helen and I doing the show together. I'll be back from my travels. And we'll be bringing you an interview with Matt Hansen, who's recently broken the official Ironman branded world record with a stunning 7 hours 39. We get his take on the race out in Texas and the story of that pretty spectacular shoulder-to-shoulder run battle that resulted in him running a 2:34 marathon. So make sure you tune in for that. A quick shout out to our sponsors again, precisionhydration.com. Remember, you can use the code OXYGENADDICT to get £9.99 worth of free product. And also, again, a massive thanks to our patrons who support the show. If you guys are interested in supporting the show with a small monthly or annual donation, you can just click on the link in the show notes or on our homepage. And all support for the show is very much appreciated. All right, guys, thanks very much for listening. I hope you have a great, safe training and racing week and that you're still out there enjoying the sunshine. Until next week, I'm Coach Rob Wilby and you've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. See ya.